Joseph Pearl, Reel 5.
After all that, I must have taken some snow with me. When he was on top of the hill, he fired 4 shots. 2 missed, and 2 hit my leg. I've got a stiff leg. I don't know if you saw it. I've got a stiff leg and a built-up shoe. Anyway, I must have bled profusely because he didn't fire anymore. He must have seen what happened and he walked away. After laying there for a little while, I got up, and although I was already down the hill, I also saw further away a main road. Why I went to the main road, I don't know, because I knew damn well if I go on the main road and somebody will see me, I'm reported and I'm not worth a penny. Anyway, I walked to the main road and all of a sudden I heard voices. Voices. And I waited and I waited and all of a sudden I heard ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, machine gun going. And voices. And all of a sudden I see a column of people, also from a concentration camp, marching to another concentration camp. On the main road, I thought to myself, here is a rescue. As I came near to me, I was laying quite right in the ditch, and between 2 sections of guards, I picked myself up, run into the column. I said, well, what are you doing here? I said, don't say nothing. And I dropped back, and I dropped back, and I dropped back, and I knew damn well the further I go back, the weaker people I'll find, people who are dying, people are going to be shot. And I went so far back until one person was already carrying another one, he says to me, he's a goner. And as he said that, I took his number, ripped up his number, and put it over my number. So next time I go to that camp, the call out that number, so I'll be, there is no name, there's only a number. I can be anybody. And I went, we went into a camp called Bokana at Hirschberg. Went to Hirschberg. And there again, I didn't know what to do with us, okay? What I did with us, we did marching, soldier marching. We were the best organized marching army in the world, I am telling you. We were going this way and that way and this way and that way, and we never touched one another. After a while, they decided to empty their camp.
What sort of camp was it regarding facilities?
Well, electric wire, that was a concentration camp. But what that camp dealt with, all again, were like gross rosen, replenishing other places. Well, in order to get the best out of the best, what they did, they dug a trench 4 feet wide, 6 feet deep, and people who jumped over the other side was deemed healthy enough to go. And those who didn't make it fell in, well, you can imagine what happened to them. And there again, I want to point out about God. We were running to jump over this place, and I picked up speed, but I found I could hear somebody running behind me. And as I jumped over, I don't know what made me. I jumped over and I looked back and I saw the person behind me wasn't going to make it. So when he was sliding, I grabbed hold of them and pulled them up. And the assassin outside opened up with a machine gun to kill up both of us, but they missed both of us. And we went into the group and there was no search. You were on the other side and that's it. And off we went on the march again. We marched for about 3 weeks. For about 3 weeks. Oh, I left out such a lot. I don't know what to tell.
I wonder what stage of the war this would have been.
This was already in 1944.
This would be late in the war then.
This was already in 1944. Yes. Mm. But what I left out was that in this concentration camp, where I was a big shot in the factory, but I was nothing in the camp, there was a loafer in this particular camp. The loafer, as I pointed out to you, he's between the lager officer and the SS, the block officer and the SS, and so forth. So one day, this boy, this loafer, he was a sadist. He killed so many people because he had over the desert, just for showing off to the SS that he can kill. He killed. And one day he picked him. He started knocking about. And I knew what he was going to do. And his name, he was a Polish fella. I said, Wojtek, I know that you're strong enough to kill me. And you will kill me. But before you do, I want to give you some advice. If you kill me, I'll come back. And when I do come back, you'll wish you were never born. I'll hound you to death. And somehow, he stopped. And from that camp, what happened? From that camp, we went on a transport.
Yes, this would have been when you were going on your march for 3 weeks. Yes, yes, from Hirschberg.
Yes.
Yes.
And he went to get away from me. So he went on the transport. And I went on the transport. And when we reached, we went to Buchenwald after about 3 weeks march and about 2 weeks in open wagons, winter. People were dying like flies. And I made myself an igloo out of these dead people, frozen people. And all I lived was on snow, through snow. And I slid in. There was another person there who was 3/4 dead. And he says to me, Joe, he said, take out my gold piece. At least have something. I said, don't worry about it. Just live. Just breathe enough that I can take you out from here.
This was on the way.
One gold tooth in the back there somehow was left behind.
This was on your way to Buchenwald, was it? Yes, yeah. On that march.
Yeah. And when we reached Buchenwald, we were 175 people left out of thousands. And when I got out of the wagon, I took him on my shoulders, and I carried him in and to the Buchenwald. And I undressed him, and I also took him into the, what do you call it, showers, but I left him on the floor. I left him on the floor because I couldn't carry him anymore. And we were washed, given clothes, we dressed, and we were marched in one of the blocks. Block 56 used to be a notorious Block 56. And there, all the underground people used to come over and say, do you know somebody who killed other people in the construction? I wanted the blockhouse sisters, I wanted the loafers, I wanted the all the people who were in charge in there that killed people. And they killed them. I killed them all off. But our block officer, he was actually a good man. He never killed anybody, but they knocked all his teeth out. They gave him a good hiding, knocked all his teeth out. And in Buchenwald, this 56, block 56, they used to give you a little disc. And you used to have going to clean up for a meal. And this block officer, because he knew what kind of a work I did in the factories, and it was trustworthy, he said to me, take my disc. You can eat my soup, but bring me home the bread. You know what I mean? I said, fair enough. But the people who dished out the food, they looked at each other faces, and they used to catch somebody who came twice, they used to kill him, on the spot, kill him. And you're going to tell me there is no God about? I did it day after day after day. I went twice round. And somehow I wasn't picked out. And at this block, we were all the four people who worked in the end, we were sleeping together. We had been here. There was a man who was laying underneath in the bottom bunk, and there was also three bunks. He says to me, I had him called Joe, I said, yes, I went in there, and he says to me, can you do me a favor, can you chew the bread for me, so I'll be able to swallow, and I chewed the bread, stuffed it in his mouth, and I'll eat that he could swallow. This carried on for about 3 weeks. And then, again, SS came in and he called all our four numbers, all the four people that we worked together. And that took us from 56 to block 66, where there were only youngsters from 8 to 16, or to 15, 8 to 15, led on. So it was like this. One half of the block was Hungarians and Czechs, and the other half were Poles. Because the Poles always thought that sophisticated than the Czechs and the Hungarians. They were in the same bloody hole, but they felt that they didn't want to mix with the Hungarians. We were the lower class, and the Czechs were the lower class, and they were the upper class. They used to put on shows for the furfars and all kinds of things. And this Buchenwald was where I was released, April 1945. Well, I wouldn't say we were rescued, because we rescued ourselves, because for 4 days the Americans was outside the camp for 4 days. What they were waiting for, I don't know, but they were waiting to link up with some army, and they knew there was a concentration camp there. And Eisenhower himself was in charge of that group. But within those 4 days, there was no SS anymore. And all of us who could hold a gun, we all had guns. We all had guns. The underground moved in the guns to rise up. And then they came in, we are here, the Americans, you know. And I was 3/4 dead. I was laying on the ground. Although I had a Luger in my hand, if I would have shot, it would have thrown me back 50 yards. And I opened my eyes, and everything was moving. And I couldn't quite see the faces. I could see the same gun, but all of a sudden I saw a smiling face. And he sort of took my hand and he lifted me up. I thought my hands were going forward and I was still on the ground. And anyway, he set me up and I looked. myself, and I thought, like, who am I? Is it me? Is it Joe? Or what is my name? For 5 years, I had no name. Am I seeing things? Am I dreaming? I couldn't quite make out. And then I took out a bar of chocolate and kicked a pile of chocolate and said, I don't want it. He said, take it. No. Then he stood me up. And when I saw myself full length, that it must be me, because I was almost told I was tall. Where am I going from here? I saw a tank coming through from the wire, so I went through the wire. And as I went through the wire, another tank came along. And there was a black person. I've never seen a Negro before. I've never seen a black person before in my life. He caught hold of me like this, and he pulled me into the tank. And I thought he was a gorilla. I thought he was going to eat me. Anyway, and I said to him, "No, Lose, let me out, Lose, let me go." He put me back, and he put me next to a farm. And I took this luger, I don't know where I got the strength from. I said to the farmer, "I want that chicken." He caught the chicken, and I went back to the camp, to the wire, and I found a pot, a rusty pot, and water which we couldn't drink for a week, because it was, if you drank it, you would get typhoid. But I boiled the water in the pot, it was rusty and dirty. Threw the water away, I boiled another lot of water, and I killed the chicken. Well, the farmer killed the chicken, I cleaned it, I took out the innards, threw away, but I had the meat. I boiled the chicken. And what I did in order to survive, every 2 hours, I had a spoonful of soup. Every 2 hours, a spoonful. I didn't want to eat anything else. Why? Because I saw what was happening to the other people. The Americans that gave them food, the first meal they gave the people was pork and beans. Their stomach was busting, typhus set in. In the meantime, in those 4 days, the SS killed 21,000 people. 21,000 people they killed. This is a part of the people that shoved in on the wagons where they were released, or they were freed, still in the wagons. The blood was running through the camp, and 20,000 people supposedly was liberated. And I can tell you now, you can take it from me. If 500 survived out of those 20,000 people, is a lot, because I would die of typhoid. I actually seen people burst, their stomach bursting open, because I saw people walking about with sacks of bread. All I could think of was bread. The more bread I had, the more I eat. But the bread was already going more and mildew. I said to him, what a fool are you? What do you want all that bread? You can go to the same baker every day and have fresh bread. No, he didn't want to give up that bread. So I was actually, what actually happened also, that all the youngsters in this block 66, and there was another block, block 8, which was in the beginning of the camp, there were young people from 3 to 8. We all went, and we went to live in the SS quarters. So we had wood. I used to I used to make my own food, and I used to cook for other people. We used to share food. And we used to make potato pancakes, and I built myself up. And also, where the access culture was, there was a little hill, where there was a big, all covered up. But then somehow the Americans found out, and they dug out and took away lorries and lorries and lorries and lorries full with gold, trinkets, chains, diamond rings, all you can think of, huge amount of gold taken out. So much so that sometimes we used to walk in the dirt, you know, where they dug up, and we used to find gold rings, and we used to find earrings, and we used to find chains, but it fell from the Lord, and so we heard it up. Anyway.
Could I just ask you a little more, about the Americans, the liberation? It seemed from what you were saying that the food was that they were giving was not well thought out.
Not thought out at all. How can you give fat food that even if you give them a chocolate, it was too much for somebody to take. The stomach can't take it. And that was the meal that dished out. And a person who is hungry, he doesn't think. He thinks, I've got food, I must eat. And they killed him with kindness. With kindness, they killed him.
Kindness. Also, were you, when you moved to your little establishment with all the young people, Joe, did the Americans set out to help you?
This is something which I can't make up to this day. Because we were not in the camp, we were somehow forgotten. But you see, the youngsters had a different kind of perception of life. And we somehow, the will to live was so strong that we didn't need anything. We only needed a little bit of space to move. You know what I mean? And there was plenty of fields, potatoes, cabbage, carrots, beetroot, whatever you wanted, you just help yourself because there was nobody there to stop you. And even if they did stop you, you killed it. You killed it.
Did you kill people at that time?
No. Because I threatened. But I never killed anybody because there was no need to, because the Germans were so used to orders that if you give them a fierce enough order, they jump. So I didn't kill anybody. But what has happened at one stage that there were some German boys came and told us that there are 4 SS hiding on the farm, and they changed their clothes in order to escape, and he will take us to them. So there was 8 of us. We went down to the farm with the guns. We were already strong, and we had the guns. And we went and we picked him up, and we were marching him in to give him to the Americans. So I said, look, this is us who killed the people, blah, 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 blah. But before we went into the camp, we saw a Russian officer. And he said, Mr. Shkotakor, he said, well, what is this? I said, well, these are SS, the trying to escape, but changed the clothes. And I'm taking them over to the Americans. He says to me, that's your gun work? That's all these guns which you're having? Have they all those bullets? I said, yeah, sure. So he took a gun. Took a gun from one of the boys, went bang, 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 bang. He said to me, you're fools. What do you think Americans will do? They pat them on the back and they say, don't be a naughty boy. Nobody asked any questions. So they shot him. Without any hesitation. And he came to the camp to find out whether there are any Russian soldiers there liberated, or whether there's any partisans or anything like that. I don't know what he came there. But all I can tell you that I got friendly with that officer. He had a nice big beard, and I thought to myself, well, I'll see what I can get out of him. Then I found out that he had a lorry with soldiers, and he's going back to Prague. No, Czechoslovakia is my home. Not exactly my home, but I come from Czechoslovakia. So I thought to myself, I'll ask him if he goes to Prague, he could maybe he could give me a lift. And as far as I knew, he was a Russian officer and a Russian. And I said to him, when are you leaving? He said, tomorrow morning, such time, I'll be off. So I said to him, can I be here before you go? And he said, yes. So I bought a chicken. I had something to eat. And I didn't need any bread because just to eat the meat is good enough. And I said to him, can you give me a lift to Prague? And he answers me in Yiddish, Chantan, in Yiddish. So I knew he was a Jew. And, but before that, I had to have a piece of paper. So I went to the American consul there, which was the setup. I said, can you give me a piece of paper? Because I want to be a Mormon, I want to go. And I gave me a piece of paper, and where I was born, my name, and the date, and my father, and so forth, and so forth, and the piece of paper. That piece of paper gave me a lifeline to have a meal from UNRWA, United Nations Relief Organization. They used to have a kitchen on every station. And if I showed that piece of paper, they used to stamp it, and this to be a meal for the day. You know, a meal for the day. So there you are. I had a piece of paper. But when I got that piece of paper, I don't know how to explain. That piece of paper meant the world to me. All of a sudden I realized I was a human being. I've been recognized as a human being. I was born. This is my birth certificate. I was born. And I was released 17 days before my 15th birthday. 17 days before my 15th birthday. And this was my birth certificate. I sat down and I sobbed my eyes out. That I've been recognized as a human being. That's all I can say. Well, I came into Prague, and I can tell you now that the people were so kind to me. Not only to me, all the survivors who came into Prague. They gave us money. They gave us clothes. They gave us food, not charged. I used to go to any restaurant. They gave us food. All we had was written across Buchenwald. And wherever you went, you had to expect he gave you food for nothing and so forth and so forth. But I couldn't stay there much longer because I was still looking for my parents.